You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
You know, subconsciously performing hyperfemininity, joined a sorority, and then I started dating the president of my sorority.
Yeah.
Kind of,
oh, wow.
Oh, my God. The dream.
That'll be my third part episode. Am I right?
Yeah. Oh, I'd watch that movie.
I'm ducking out, you're ducking out. Let's duck out together. See what it's all about.
Ducking out, ducking out, ducking out, ducking out.
Hi, and welcome to Diking Out, a podcast that likes Kamala Harris Bette Porter jokes, but loves Karine Jean-Pierre, Harris's real-life Black lesbian chief of staff. I'm
yes.
Carolyn Bergier.
And I'm Melody Kamali.
And today we are diking out with activist and video producer and host Maria Tritis about being intersex. But first, some announcements. The lineup is out, and oh man, are the RSVPs just rolling in at a record pace, and what is going to be the biggest virtual lesbian bar hang ever. Just to remind everyone, we are partnering with the Lesbian Bar Project to put on an event as part of their month-long fundraiser. The events can be Monday, November 23rd at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We're going to be streaming it on YouTube Live and Facebook Live. It's going to be free, but we do ask that you RSVP so that we can send you the right links in case anything changes and just to make it easy to communicate with you. So sign up on Eventbrite. If you go to our Instagram at Diking Out, you can see the link is in our bio. This lineup is insane. We've got Cameron Esposito, Sydney Washington, Emma Willman, Allie Clayton. So we're going to get comedy from all of them, all past guests of the podcast that you know and love. We're going to have a conversation with Leo Shang from the L Word Generation Q. We're going to spotlight some of the bar owners of the remaining 15 bars in this country, lesbian bars. We're going to have a musical performance by Mary Lambert. And we're also going to have appearances from Leah Delaria and podcast favorite Rita Brent. How's that?
Unreal.
It's crazy. I'm so excited about this. And, you know, if I haven't mentioned it already, there are only 15 lesbian bars remaining in the country. And I do want to give them a quick shout out. A League of Her Own in Washington, D.C., Blush and Blue in Denver, Colorado, Cubbyhole in New York, Henrietta Hudson in New York, Hers in Mobile, Alabama, Ginger's in Brooklyn, New York, Gossip Grill in San Diego, Lipstick Lounge in Nashville, Tennessee, My Sister's Room in Atlanta, very near and dear to my heart, that one, Pearl Bar in Houston, Texas, Slammers in Columbus, Ohio, which I really want to go to. I want to go to all of these, but a place called like Slammers in Columbus, Ohio feels like the dykiest place to be. But this next one also, this name has a special place in my heart. Sue Ellen's. That's a gay Susan bar in Dallas,
and
Texas. Yeah. Toasted Walnut, ooh la la, in Philadelphia, and Walker's Pint in Milwaukee, and Wild Rose in Seattle. I can't believe that when I went to Seattle, I didn't go to Wild Rose.
I can't believe I never made it to Walker's Pint in Milwaukee, the amount of times I went there while living in Chicago.
Wow. I've never been to Milwaukee. I also missed out on going to Gossip Grill in San Diego, but I have friends there, and I know it is an awesome space. All these places are awesome. I know that we have made jokes on the podcast about some of the New York establishments before, but I have so much love for them, and I want them to thrive and survive. And I hope everybody can join us for this event Monday, November 23rd. RSVP, it's going to be a crazy night.
It's going to be epic. And another reminder to check us out on Jemmy.
Jemmy is a way for us to interact with our listeners in one-off situations. So it's for people who, you know, I guess you could, if you're already a patron on Patreon, there are things that aren't on Patreon that you can get on Jemmy, or if you can't support us on a monthly basis on Patreon, but you want something special for yourself,
you can book a one-on-one with either of us or one with the both of us.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? If you've always wanted to dyke out with us, this is your chance on Jemmy. Or we could record a cameo style video for you or a loved one or your parents to explain to them what your sexuality or identity is.
We can do that for you.
Yeah.
For a price.
So many cool options. And of course, there's always our Patreon where you can get ad-free episodes. You can get extra content. Sometimes we record extra questions with our guests that are up there. Sometimes we have episodes that are just Melody and I chatting about things. Sometimes we're downloading about a recording we just had. So get all of that content. And also at the $10 a month level, you get to join our super awesome Facebook group that's for patrons only, and it's the only time I'm active on Facebook.
Hard same. It is the only reason I sign up, and I'm still trying to figure out a way for my Facebook app to only alert me when there's action on there. Otherwise, have all notifications for that website off.
Yeah, I got a message from my cousin in Montreal, and she was like, just checking in. You haven't posted in a while on Facebook. I'm like, I'm so active on Facebook, but only in the patrons only group.
Yeah.
And I love it. What a great little community we have there. Finally, just if you haven't already, please, please, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us, especially reviews like this one. This listener wrote, I feel both entertained and seen. This is my favorite queer podcast. I was feeling starved of good queer women-centered content, and we all know it's a desert out there. And found Dyking Out. I have to admit, it has grown on me with each listen. Now when I see a new episode in my feed, I look forward to breaking up the monotony of my workday by spending some time with Carolyn and Melody. Thanks, y'all.
You are so welcome.
You're welcome. That review sounds like a plant. That's
like, I know.
It feels like I instructed someone to leave that review. That's how wonderful
it's
it
so
is.
It's so perfect. It feels like we paid US dollars for that.
Yeah. But we didn't. That's a real listener review. And, you know, if you're not one for words, you can just go and hit 5 stars. Just crush that 5-star. Well, I think that is it for announcements. Melody, I have to ask you, what was it like to be in the part of the country that thinks Trump won the election?
Oh, my God. Let me tell you, when my dad picked me up from the airport, we kept our masks on in the car with the windows down. When we pulled into Sun City, the retirement community my parents live in, we were getting a lot of glares. And my dad goes, oh, yeah. A mask is a vote for Biden. Like, people were furious because I thought it was so funny that we were getting a lot of looks on the drive-in that I decided to put my face shield back on, and that really got some furious looks.
Melody, it was, don't be scared just because we're almost at 200,000 new cases per day.
All right.
Per day. Stop being such a wuss.
Seriously. It was scary, but they live very close to Savannah, Georgia. Every time I went into Savannah, it was the complete opposite. You know, SCAD's there. It's a lot of students.
Artsy college kids. Yeah.
Hip to it. And a lot of artsy masks. But yeah, a lot more mask wearing in Savannah. The reason I got a lot of looks was because of my mask, but it also was all of the shirts I packed down with me. It was like my first day, it was in huge block letters, woman up. Then we got "You're a nasty woman." I was like, let's bring all of them. So yes, the mask and the language on
well,
the
shirt. Somebody has to be there to counter the father's nature truck.
You saw that? I posted this on my Instagram stories. Of course, the landscaping vendor that the community uses in the community where we have streets like Robert E. Lee Way. Father Nature Landscaping. So my sister is now living with them in the retirement community and says as COVID goes on, more and more millennials are popping up in there.
Oh, yeah. My heart goes out. Yeah. I bet. Oh, man. My dad used to live in one of those communities in Florida for a few years, and I effing loved it.
Oh, my God. I love it. It's like camp. Pools
so nice.
Everywhere.
Walking trails. It's just like very clean and...
They have a swim team they're trying to recruit my dad on right now.
I love it.
Like one of the older women was like, hey, hot stuff, you want to... My parents are convinced there's a huge swingers community within the community.
Oh, it I'm seems like a blast. And I know nothing about them, but that adds up.
Yeah.
You got to pass the time somehow.
I love it. It's not all. So it's interesting. So I didn't see the South. Like, whenever we'd leave the community, I'd get an idea. Yeah, people are upset. But like in the actual community they live in, it's a lot of people retired from New York, New Jersey, Chicago. And I know this because everyone keeps their original license plate from the state in which they retired from. And what do? They slap it on their golf cart so everyone knows where everyone's from because everyone has a golf cart.
I love it.
Toot around in. It's so cute.
No, glad to have you back here. You know, yeah, just saw a lot of watching the news. Some gay news. I've been looking at the website 538 a lot, even though I still hold a grudge against them over 2016. But they had this cool feature about how Sue Bird and Megan Rapinoe have gotten better at their respective sports since they've been together. So I thought that kind of tied in nicely to our rec league conversation, that it's good for athletes to date each other for the sport.
Yes. Okay?
That women athletes should be scissoring off the court, off the field for better performance on the field. It's now scientifically proven. We have this well-researched case of two dykes just blazing the trail for everybody else.
We have the data. I mean, they have on this article, like, the stats. Like, goals per 90 minute, her assists all improving since she started dating Sue Bird. So do it for the game, not just the culture.
Those are my favorite kind of statistics.
The only math I'm good at. I remember I said that on my first... Dyking out.
You said that about squirting, Melody.
I know. I know.
And then everybody was talking online about the trailer for Happiest Season. That's Clea DuVall's movie that she directed and co-wrote. Lots of talk about it. What we're going to say is limited right now because A, we haven't seen it. B, we're still holding out hopes that Clea is going to do the podcast and can make time to dyke out with us. But I will say a lot of people were surprised, at least a lot of queer people were surprised that the storyline is what it is. Like, most people were like, wow, I wasn't expecting this first studio produce. So that's what makes us different than other queer holiday stories that exist, which there are a couple. But this is the first like major studio backed queer rom-com featuring an out A-lister, Kristen Stewart. And it's about having to like pretend you're in the closet in front of your girlfriend's family at the holidays because she's not out yet. And we're all like, what?
It's kind of like, yeah, we have to start over now that we're getting studio backed films.
Right, right. I was like, what year is this? But then I wondered, you know, this is Clea DuVall behind this. This isn't just some straight people in a room making decisions. So there has to be a reason behind why this story, and maybe this is her story. And the more I read about it, the more that seems to be the case, because, you know, for a lot of Hollywood actors, and probably Kristen Stewart's story, but maybe less so about family and more about millions of Americans who are hungry for Hollywood gossip and things like of that nature. So yeah, Clea and Kay Stu both spent some time being quiet about their sexuality, and that probably caused tension in their relationship. So this is a story that rings true for them and rings true for a lot of people in the queer community at some point. It's just like, it's 2020. I was really hoping that the plot would have to do with, if she goes there and she's in the closet, maybe it's like the mom falls in love with her, and then there's like a hot mom storyline, you know? Is that just me? Probably.
You just think about Mary.
I am.
There's something about Mary.
Yes, there is something about Mary Steenburgen, and I think it's about time that she plays a queer woman with the hots for her daughter's lover.
She's a babe.
Is that too much to ask for, Clea DuVall?
We'll bring it up in our inevitable interview, so.
Please do the podcast. We're big fans. We really are. I can't wait to watch it, though. And that comes out after our big show, so that'll be nice, you know, once the show is behind us, to wind down and turn on some Hulu for some happiest season.
Way to bring it back. Absolutely.
Speaking of gay happenings, Melody, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
Well, Carolyn, few things while I was down south. I went to Savannah, like I said. My sister just started managing a bike shop. Pretty gay of her, in Savannah. And I gave her a stack of Dyking Out cards because you know there's going to be lesbians.
Oh, yeah.
Going into a bike shop in Savannah by the school. So, guys, check out Savannah on Wheels. Get some business cards.
Bike shop? Do you mean dyke shop?
Hey! Oh. No, I really, like, gave her the stack of cards, and I was like, here's some things to look out for. Like, I told her how to profile a lesbian and approach a lesbian in a non-accusatory in a somehow natural way.
I'm glad that she has a lesbian watch list and is sexually profiling.
Yeah.
And also, if you're already a listener of the podcast and you want exclusive free merch, go and pick up a Dyking Out business card.
It's got a very moody picture of us on there. What else? CNN is on always at my parents' house. So we were watching Don Lemon, and my mom gave me everything I need to know about his husband. We did a deep dive on their relationship. That felt really gay. And then we were watching the CMAs one night. Don't know why. I'm telling you.
Because you missed Allie. That's why.
Because I missed my girlfriend so much. We were watching the CMAs and Miley Cyrus came up in conversation, and I got to explain pansexuality to my mom and then thus come out to her as pan. It was a real productive conversation. Last gay thing with my mom, I was doing a deep dive on the poet Rumi. My parents love Rumi and Hafez and all these Sufi Persian poets, a lot of that paraphernalia around the house. And I was researching him, and there's a lot of rumors about this ancient poet, that he's gay and was in love with this other poet, Shams.
Ooh, hot goss.
Yeah, right? I asked my mom, I was like, do you think Rumi was gay? And she just like rolled her eyes at me and was like, of course, Melody, all poets are gay. Which I loved. I also took a walk with my mom on the beach and did let her know you have a crush on her. So sorry.
Oh, no.
She says she's very flattered. And then I was like, because this is how it came up. I was taking pictures of her and she's like, did you think you got enough? And I was like, these are for Carolyn.
Oh, that's so embarrassing. Melody. Yeah,
I'm sorry. She asked me why, Carolyn. I know what she looks like. This was for you. I even went on our album and got like vacation pictures of her in a bikini for you. Is that weird? So look forward to those in the G-Chat.
Love it. Well, thank you, Melody.
You're welcome, Carolyn.
Thanks for looking out for me. That's very gay.
What about you, Carolyn? What's the gayest thing you did this week?
I thought it was going to be that, you know, I mentioned before that past intern of the podcast, Karina, she's still in college working on her thesis, and it's a thesis I wish I could have worked on when I was in college, all about lesbian representation on TV. And she was studying lesbian kiss episodes and posted this interesting grid about the lesbian kiss episode. So that's kind of like the sweeps episode that gets thrown in, where it's a character that's only in it for the one episode, and then there's a kiss, and it's just, it sucks. You know, it's not, it's for ratings, it's for dudes to get excited, it's for moms to get angry, but it's never really for queer women. So I was scanning the examples of these, and there were some that I hadn't seen before. So I was just watching, trying, like, spend an hour on YouTube just finding these clips of same-sex kisses between women.
Were there a lot of montages set to like Enya-esque music? Because I feel like once...
I wish they were all in just one video. That would have saved me a lot of time. But the two in the one that I got to rewatch, because I totally forgot about it until Emily Danforth mentioned it on our episode, and that was Party of Five, where Neve Campbell's character kisses her professor. And I, after like a lot of crawling the internet, I was able to find that clip. So that was good to watch. I mean, I think the amount of time I put into trying to find Neve Campbell's kiss from Party of Five was pretty gay.
Yeah.
But then the most offensive one that I came across was from Sex and the City, a show that I never liked. And I know a lot of queer people like it. But when I saw on the spreadsheet that there was a kiss between Alanis Morissette and Sarah Jessica Parker, I'm like, I have to. Yeah, no, we're not talking about Samantha here.
Just assumed it was the Samantha lesbian episode.
No, because Samantha had like an actual bisexual storyline.
Yeah, and that wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I heard that wasn't bad. I didn't see any of that. But there's a adult spin the bottle game, as adults do. And
adult New Yorkers.
Alanis Morissette is in this circle, and like Carrie Bradshaw does not like the idea that she's like, oh, oops, it landed on a girl, I gotta go again. And then Alanis is all like, I don't mind, which is all of our dream.
Why don't I remember this?
Right? Well, you can look it up. It's on YouTube. And then Sarah Jessica Parker reluctantly kisses her. And then afterwards says, it wasn't bad, kind of like chicken.
Okay, I do remember this. Because I remember that line, and I hate it.
Right. That is like the most awful. Who kisses Alanis Morissette and compares it to fucking chicken? All right.
I'll tell you who. A fucking chicken. She a chicken. Yeah, Carrie's the worst character.
That's why I can never get into the show. I'm like, this show is just sorry. I know a lot of people like it. I know a lot of queer women like it, and I can't with Carrie Bradshaw.
I used to really like it. My roommate had the whole box set in college, so I thought
everybody's roommate had the box set in college, except for mine, and that's why we were roommates.
Kim Cattrall, though, carries the show for me.
Yeah, so I thought that, you know, my journey into YouTube lesbian TV cases for research, you know, just in solidarity with Karina, just typing away at that thesis. But the gayest thing that I truly did was when I first watched Bly Manor, I watched it mostly by myself, and I really wanted Cecilia to watch it. So we had been rewatching it, and this week we finally got to the final episode. And the gayest thing I did was hold my wife in my arms as she sobbed uncontrollably at the conclusion of Bly Manor.
Oh man, I sobbed uncontrollably. Like, I really did. Allie fell asleep during the second to last episode and just went to bed somewhere in the beginning of the finale, and I kept watching it. So
the second to last episode is not a good one. That was the only one that Cecilia was like,
right,
they could have really trimmed this down. This is a really long backstory.
So I don't blame her.
Cecilia was like, why'd they have to make it so sad? And was just crying. And then she was like, do you want to just sit here and cry longer? I'm like, not really. Like, I think we should get to bed. It's like 1 a.m.
Yeah, that's how moving it is. Cecilia and I are both on SSRIs and sobbed uncontrollably after that.
Yeah, I haven't seen her cry like that at a TV show in a while. And let me tell you, second watch, almost better than the first, because one, I was able to pay attention a lot more because I wasn't at my mom's house, and also just catching, like, knowing the logic of how everything works in the story, a lot of things make a lot more sense. You know, on the first watch, you're like, I don't know if I'm following this.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time confused. Right.
Yes.
And, like, distracted, because I was like, I think I missed something. I had to have missed something.
Right, right. And the second time, you're like, oh, I know exactly what's happening, and this is actually really good now that I know the logic of
it. Okay, I might have to rewatch it. I didn't know you had rewatched it, but I did see every time I logged on to Facebook that the thread in our patron group was still popping off, and I was like, wow, Carolyn's obsessed. She is still talking about this. So it makes sense that you rewatched it. I really thought you just still couldn't stop talking about it from weeks after your first watch.
No, yeah, because one of our patrons was questioning some of the logic throughout and asking questions. I'm like, you know, I really will have to watch it again. So upon second watch, I was keeping those things in mind. I'm like, oh yeah, I think your partner was right about this thing. This thing still doesn't add up, whatever. But that's for sure the gayest thing I did this week.
Yeah, that's why it's always at the top of my feed.
You're welcome. I think that's enough Bly Manor talk, and we should really get to our topic today, which I'm excited about. How about you, Melody?
I'm so amped. I really enjoyed this conversation. I learned so much. This person is so cool.
Yes, and I hope that we can hang out in person sometime in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So today we are diking out with video producer, host, and intersex activist Maria Treatise. Maria's work has been featured all over, including on Them, Huffington Post, Teen Vogue, and more. We saw some of her videos and couldn't wait to get her on the pod, and we hope that you'll enjoy this conversation as much as we did. Let's get into it. Maria, thank you so much for diking out with us today. We're so excited to have you here.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to dike out with both of you.
As are we.
So you are Brooklyn-based, correct?
Yes. I live in Bushwick, and I've lived here for I'm coming up on 7 years, I think, in New York.
Have you been in Brooklyn during the whole pandemic?
I have. I've pretty much been here the whole time. Except for a couple little weekend trips upstate or like day trips.
Yeah.
I have definitely been dipping into like the cottagecore lesbian, which is something I've learned about this summer.
We've all become familiar.
Yes. And also just like, I mean, I've always been kind of granola. So I just like, I feel better when I'm in nature. And so tried to get upstate as much as I could during all this craziness. But yeah, mostly holding it down in Brooklyn. And it hasn't been so bad.
Well, that's good to hear that the pandemic hasn't been too bad for you. We're going to ask you a question that we ask all of our guests, and that is, what is the gayest thing you did this week?
Oh, man, the gayest thing I did this week. Shit. Let me think. I mean, I just feel like my existence in general is just like so gay. I have been laying low a little bit because I actually got a breast reduction because I had like bigger boobs and they just were not quite fitting me. So I got my like androgynous like small femme tits of my
I'm
dreams.
I'm so jealous. I've always wanted a reduction. Oh, I have so many questions. I'll probably have to email you.
Yeah, we can follow up. Yeah. But it's honestly, if you can make it happen, fucking do it. Can I cuss? I'm assuming that's
yes.
I totally recommend it. It's been, I mean, I'm like 3 weeks out. So, I'm like kind of in the throes of, healing and whatnot, but
right.
Yeah. But I feel like that's like the gayest thing I did this month was get my, like, I'm calling them the androgynous femme tits of my dreams. They're not quite so, they're pretty femme actually, but I'm calling them androgynous. But yeah.
Also laying low is pretty dykey, pretty specifically lesbian. Okay.
Yeah. That's all I do is like, especially I'm telling you, I became a cottagecore lesbian and like I have a back deck. And so I made a garden throughout quarantine. And so like, I really have been like laying low.
So okay. Gardening. Yeah. Gardening. Yeah. What kind of stuff are you growing? Give us the details.
Mostly flowering plants this year. I have like prize, I call them my prize winning aloe plants. they're just like gigantic. And then I have some like a really nice jasmine. Hydrangeas. I had like 32 different types of flowers on my back porch, which sounds like a lot, but it's not that hard to actually get that many different varietals.
Yeah, it's just hard to get a deck in Brooklyn.
It is hard to get
a deck. That's the harder part.
It's the biggest, we call it the biggest room in our apartment because it's a good size. And like my apartment is just like a shoebox.
Well, that paid off for this year because I feel like
it really did.
Most years, most people wouldn't use their outdoor space as much. But I feel like with not being able to go anywhere else, it feels like a second home to have outdoor space.
Yeah, I fully live in Prospect Park now.
Yeah, I would too. I just thought of another gay thing I did this week is last night.
Give it to
last
us.
Night for dinner. It's a small thing. Last night for dinner, I had my sister is dating an Irish guy, and she made fish pie, which is like an Irish thing. And so I like could not stop laughing at the fact that like we were eating fish pie, and then the joke, my sister's straighter than an arrow, and like the joke about fish pie just lasted all night. So and then finally explained it to her. So I feel like explaining to my sister what fish pie is probably actually the gayest thing.
That is a good number of gay things you have going on. I'm glad to hear that the surgery went well. And as somebody who has had small boobs her entire life, I'm going to say they're pretty easy to deal with. It's pretty nice.
Brag.
I'm looking forward to that. Like, just like I've nearly smothered myself like doing yoga. So I'm excited to, once I'm like fully healed, I'm excited to take them for a test downward dog.
Downward dogs. You shouldn't have to choke on flesh.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, I was doing it like a shoulder stand and I panicked because it flopped and it just caught me in the face. And it was a lot. God. It was a lot. But I am worried about how it's going to affect my like, you know, just like being out. Like, I don't know. I'm like, did I have power in those big boobs? You know, like, am I going to in gay spaces? Am I going to be looked at differently? Probably not. Maybe more people will probably look at them because they're a little more in your face now, but that's probably enough about my boobs, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like we haven't even done an episode on boobs yet, per se. So this boob talk feels fresh. But yes, we
well, that can be. I can be a two parter.
Yeah, all right,
for another love time. It. Talk about this, and then we'll just have a maybe that could be like a live Q&A.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll do that after I get mine.
And maybe this could be a segue. But like, I feel like being intersex has gotten me like I'm really good at talking very openly about anything with my body, pretty much.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I'm like not afraid to like I've had to explain it so many times in my life that it's just like anything's kind of everything's on the table, you know?
Well, I hope you're looking forward to explaining it again because we are here to talk about being intersex. And I am so excited that we have you here for this topic. One, because you do such great work in terms of your advocacy for intersex people. And I've, you know, watched your videos and you just break it down like so easily. And it's just like so informative for a topic that I feel like doesn't get much attention, even though it's probably getting more attention now than it ever has. It's still compared to like all the other things we talk about, especially in the queer community, just not getting enough. Do you feel that way?
Totally. I mean, it's, you know, well, first of all, we are a small percentage of the population. We're about 1.7% of the population, which is, you know, the same amount as naturally born redheads. So you know, that is kind of a lot.
It is a lot. I think it's bigger than a lot of people think. I mean, I'm a natural redhead, so that.
Oh my gosh! See,
yeah,
see, yeah. So it's you've probably met everyone's probably met an intersex person. I mean, I'm positive everyone's met an intersex person, whether they knew it or not, whether that intersex person knew it or not.
Yeah,
you know, I feel like we've all. Everyone's probably met someone with a biological sex variation. You know what I mean?
And yeah. I guess we can start by quickly defining intersex just for any of our listeners who are unfamiliar with the term because it's something that doesn't get talked about.
It is an umbrella term, right? It can mean a lot.
Yeah. So intersex is the umbrella term for individuals born with sex characteristics that don't typically fit the script for what society deems normal. For male and female. I mean, and you know, we're only audio right now, but when I say normal, I put that in quotes every time. I never say normal without using air quotes now because like, what is normal?
Yeah. Right.
But basically that means that my secondary sex characteristics expressed themselves differently when I was born, and continue to as an adult, you know? But yeah, basically being intersex is your sexual characteristics, your sex characteristics don't line up or don't fit the script of what is typical for male or female. So that can be anything from ambiguous genitalia to differences in chromosomes to hormone production, hormone response. You know, it's a whole variety of things.
Right.
But yes, under the umbrella of intersex. So my specific variation of intersex is I have partial androgen insensitivity syndrome. And I have, so that means I have XY chromosomes and I physically formed, in many ways, typically female.
He had big boobs.
I had big boobs. I started, it's sort of hard to talk, you know, as I talk about it, you know, I'll hit a lot of things and I feel like we kind of, I can tell you, I can give you the overview and then we sort of have to unpack it. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
Say, I started hormone replacement therapy at 12, but I didn't know I was intersex till I was 18.
Oh, really?
Yes. You know?
So I
read your story and that was just such a interesting thing to read about. And I would love to you to share more of that journey of, not being really told exactly what was happening.
Sure. And you know, that's kind of the story that most intersex people kind of share the experience of not knowing.
Yeah, being kept in the dark. It's crazy.
Yeah, being kept in the dark. And so, you know, growing up, my parents are both in the medical field. So when I was 2 years old, my dad was changing my diaper and he found a lump kind of in my lower abdomen area that was concerning to him. And so my parents took me to the doctor, you know, kind of began the diagnosis of finding out that I was intersex. What the lump that they found was what they called gonadal streaks, which are basically like sex cells that are that were forming in the body but didn't get the right hormones that they needed to fully develop. So they were basically like underdeveloped internal testes that, you know, in the past, doctors said that if they weren't removed, that they could become potentially cancerous because there's, you know, there was no research done on it. And so to normalize the body, doctors remove that. And if there's any, and then if, you know, if your body doesn't look on the outside what a typical male or female looks like, you know, they kind of correct that. And so when I was 8, I had another surgery that sort of got everything looking right, got my genitals looking, you know, what is typical. And then hormone replacement therapy started around 12. And then my parents told me at 18, they broke it down because they needed to, I was told I needed to be prepared to have sex with men in college.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of interesting as a lot of intersex care is like prep to fit you into like a normal female body to prepare you to have essentially to have sex with men and to procreate. You can't they tell you can't procreate, obviously, but it's like per society, our bodies are built for men, basically.
Like play the part.
Yeah. And so, and that's something else that the doctors told my parents early on, you know, like put her in a dress and she will grow up to be a girl, you know?
Yeah. To just kind of like condition you to be like as feminine as possible.
Yeah. And I think, and you know, I'm lucky my parents were supportive. Two things I was lucky. I think, you know, I had female pronouns. I was perceived female. I've always been perceived female. And I, like that did kind of align with, you know, my identity. And my parents were never too strict on like, you know, keeping me in a dress or things like that. And I was kind of like a typical tomboy in that way. But, you know, my whole life, it's always, and I was raised Catholic. So.
You're here.
Yeah. It's so, you know, it's a lot of, this is, God made you this way. You know, this is something you don't talk about. You know, keep it to yourself. And so my whole life up until I was 23, 24, I pretty much kept it a secret. You know, I told a couple people here and there. Once I started dating, you know, it was kind of necessary to tell people. I didn't really find out pretty much until I moved to New York and kind of began the journey then. And then, you know, in my early 20s, I was focusing. It was easy to put it on the back burner in my early 20s and in college because I found out that I like dating women and, you know, came out as a lesbian and began that story.
Right.
Yeah. And so I think because I always felt different in being intersex, it kind of it helped me avoid dating men in high school. I was always like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to like – I'm really mature, and so I need to like find a really mature guy in college. And so then I get to college and you know, subconsciously performing hyperfemininity, joined a sorority. And then I started dating the president of my sorority.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. The dream.
That'll be my third part episode. Am I right?
Yeah. I'd watch that movie.
Yeah. I've thought about it.
Where
about
is
making
that?
It a movie.
You have to. Yes.
Because yeah, it kind of needs to be, the whole thing needs to be a movie. My God. Yeah. And so I sort of discovered my sexuality that way, in college. And
did you find being Catholic too helped with like avoiding men? Because I know for me, I was like, no sex before marriage. Easy peasy.
Oh, 100%. When I got my license, I had a purity ring on the embarrassing. Like that's a little bit embarrassing from my past life to admit, but like I had a purity ring, that I bought for myself.
I love it.
I like my parents were like, what is like, what? Like,
we would have been best friends in high school, Maria.
Yeah. So I bought myself a purity ring and wore that.
Do you normally get that for yourself? Sorry, I wasn't raised with religion. So purity ring is like an emo band to me.
Oh, I know. I cannot purity ring the band. I can't like think about them without being like this. I don't know. I feel weird about it. And then their music's all, you know, I'm just like, oh, yeah. This is like a weird, too many weird feelings with this band. Yeah. So actually I knew a lot of girls whose dads bought them purity rings, which is kind of gross,
even creepier.
Yeah. So like,
Wow.
Yeah. True love waits is what the purity ring said. I was like, what did the ring say? True love waits. Yeah.
When you said that you got surgery when you were 8, what, I mean, as an 8-year-old, that just feels so young. Did you have any idea what was happening or like what was going on?
Not really. It was like, you know, I had some complications urinating, which like it, some individuals have that problem. And so that was kind of the guise that I went into it. That was what I was told, is that I was going to have some repositioning of my urethra. Mm. But like, I wasn't told that when I was a kid, because like, I don't know what that means, but it was like, it's going to help you make, it's going to help you feel better. It's just, and like, that was it. And you know, when you're that young, you kind of just go along with whatever your parents are saying that, you know, is right. As we go into all this, like my parents are very supportive, and we've had tons of talks about what we would do differently now. And like, you know, they're fully on, like I've had all these talks with them, and there's a little bit of guilt and whatnot. And, but that's just how it was. And I mentioned earlier that my parents are medical professionals, but it's still, you know, even they made these decisions, you know, because it was what science said was best.
Right.
It's what society says is correct. So it's just, it's really complicated. And then it goes back to the silencing thing. Like, one of the main things about being intersex is like to be silenced about it. And so, yeah, it's interesting not being silent about it and working through all that. But yeah. So as an 8-year-old, I was excited to watch Johnny Tsunami in the hospital, staying overnight and eating like all the free popsicles I wanted at any time, like just by pushing a button.
Right.
That's like, you know, I think it's, it was fun when I was 8. It's incredibly traumatizing as a 30-year-old.
Right.
But, you know, we work through it as I laugh. Yeah. I mean, it was confusing. It was really confusing. And like I told a couple people about it, and it's weird. It's sort of like one of the bigger things that like began my like truly feeling like I was different and not being able to explain it. You know, everybody feels like they're different.
But, right.
Like, you know. Yeah, it was just like a feeling different, but not being able to explain it.
And not having like media to even look to.
No media. No, and you know, no one else, and like being told to actively suppress it and like not talk about it, or, you know, but it's confusing. And, you know, especially as you hit puberty and people are getting their period, and like, you know, what brand of tampon you use is like a weird topic of conversation that you like feel that you don't think about as like a person who menstruates, but if you know, you are perceived to be someone who's supposed to be menstruating and you're not,
right?
You're like, what the hell is wrong with me? And so I'd like carry tampons in my backpack, and like, you know, it's like, it's weird. It's an interesting way to grow up, kind of.
Yeah, for sure.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
I need you to find me. The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Before you knew that you were intersex, did you know anything about like intersex as a concept or as a thing? Was it something that they taught in school for you?
No, I had never heard of, and like I went to Catholic school.
Well, they're definitely not.
Through eighth grade, at least. My like sex education was like learning to tuck my skirt under my like thighs and then like sit with my ankles crossed, you know?
Right, right.
And learning about differences in like sexual development was not a thing.
Yeah.
There was no mention of any type of variation except like one man, one woman, they marry, they have kids, that's it. Didn't know life was so complicated and fun. but
I remember learning about it in my biology class, and they used the term hermaphrodite, which I believe is not a term that that's like an old.
So yeah, so that's glad you brought that up, because you might be hearing like, I guess, you know, not you, but like the queer people in the queer community might be hearing that word more and more now.
Really?
But it is definitely like, it's definitely considered a slur, but people have sort of like reclaimed, like a lot of activists are trying to reclaim it.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And I guess I did hear about intersex people, but it was always in a negative way.
Yes.
Hearing the term hermaphrodite. You know what I mean? It's like,
that's what I was going to say. It's like, I remember we learned about it and then it felt like kind of this joke. And then people started calling each other a hermaphrodite as like a way to make fun of somebody who was maybe like not, you know, any guy that wasn't super masculine. It was like, oh, Greg's probably a hermaphrodite and stuff like that. And then it became like this joke. And looking back on it, I'm like, how horrifying. Like, there could have been someone in class, or there probably was somebody like in my school, definitely, who was intersex. Maybe they didn't know it at the time, though. But like, there's just such a lack of education, especially like for kids. And I feel like that'd be so important for people to just understand that, like, hey, biology, like sex is actually a spectrum and it's not one thing or the other. And that's okay. And it's all normal. And it's just as normal as having red hair, you know?
Totally. And like another intersex activist broke it down in a way one time that like really just like kind of clicked. It's like, nobody has the same nose. Nobody has the same mouth. Nobody has the same ears. Like, all noses are different sizes. You know what I mean?
Right.
All genitalia looks different. If you lined up all the sexual partners you've ever had, like, you could probably be like, you know, that's so-and-so's pussy. That, you know what I mean? It's like,
right,
you could line it up and know, because everybody's different. It's all on a scale. So it's like, why, you know, it's interesting and kind of it's like something I grapple with, because I'm just like, how can you not see that like everything's on a spectrum? And if you just like, you know, it's like, of course there are going to be like people who produce more or less hormones or have, you know, this body part or not this body part. It's just like, it's, you know, we put so much weight on like having the right sex organs for men that, you know, we like get lost to the sauce a little bit. But yeah, I mean, the only examples I ever had, I mean, and still a lot of examples are negative, but yeah, there's one instance actually, and I know a lot of people kind of think about this, this just popped into my head. There was an episode of House where they had someone who like got sick on the show and they found out she had internal testes. And like, basically this guy and his wife came in, his wife had internal testes, she was intersex, and it was like this whole thing, he left her, you know, it was like a big scandal.
Ugh.
And like, that was weird because I didn't have the language or know, but I like knew that I was that girl, you know? And so I like, that was just another thing that kind of like puts you a little deeper in that like whole feeling like you're alone kind of.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, in terms of media representation, I remember the first time. So I was watching clips on YouTube of the show Faking It, just for the gay stuff.
Okay, that show is great. Like, well, first of all, I watched it because of the intersex storyline, but the gay storyline is great. The lesbian storyline is amazing in that.
Yeah.
I loved it.
And I didn't know that there was going to be an intersex storyline when I was watching it. I was just like, oh, a show with gay stuff. Let me like watch it just for that that subplot. But then, when I was watching it, and the a stepsister who she's a stepsister who comes out as
the blonde chick.
She's intersex, like and she's conservative. I think
she is a sister, but she's they are stepsisters, and she's like the cool, popular cheerleader chick, and she's intersex.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The way that was handled, like it seemed, I mean, I don't know like what.
So that show was done. The MTV producers worked with Interact, which is like, is a great organization, intersex organization that advocates for the legal rights of intersex infants.
Well, good on MTV for that. Would that be so hard for everyone else to do? Jesus Christ.
It was like, I mean, MTV has kind of always held it down with like queer representation, and for the most part, I think they have too many. What I've realized is like they have too many male editors. Like, I know men are editing their work because of like, they're just the way that they're creating these storylines. But anyway, that's that's another episode. So media representation overall has not been, honestly, that's been one of the better, like scripted things, at least, because a lot of things are kind of like trauma porn, and it's like, you
like
know,
Law and Order.
Law and Order. Or like, and then, you know, Chicks with Dicks is like a big thing that people like make fun of a lot.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you if anyone had gotten it right, but I don't feel like maybe no, not yet. Any show or any
things in media. I think faking it, I'm trying to think about if there's any like, I mean, faking it was pretty good, but I think, yeah, there's not a lot. It's a lot of like activists doing the work. And like, you know, we've like, luckily in the last couple of years, we've had some more mainstream, you know, Hannah Gabby, the awesome model
yeah.
came mm-hmm. out. Hannah Gabby has been like an amazing like beacon for the community, and like really given us a lot of spotlight. So that's been really good. But yeah, it's pretty scarce out there.
I Googled it and was looking at the Wikipedia page of intersex representations, because I knew faking it. And I remember there was an episode of Law and Order that was more about like a circumcision gone bad and then raising an identical twin to be a different gender. But that was a whole thing.
That was an episode of Law and Order.
Law and Order, SVU.
It's interesting that they do that. That is kind of like the beginning. That's sort of like intersex history, right? Like,
yes, it's based right on there. That. Yeah.
Yeah, because Dr. John Money, who's kind of, he is sort of the villain of the intersex community, because he was the doctor that sort of wrote the rule book on like gender studies.
Right.
And so, he said that gender is a lot of, it's nurture.
That
so
it's all nurture, yeah.
Yeah. If you put a kid in a dress, they'll be a girl. And so, you know, there was the just like the episode, there was a botched circumcision. They tried to raise the individual as female. Once they found out, like, you know, it's just, it speaks to like kind of the trauma and a lot of the like stories that intersex individuals face, is that it's like, you know, you're lied to or things are covered up. And then there's not a lot of resources or like, you know, like life in general, there's not a rule book on how to handle things, but it just feels like, you know, there's especially not one for intersex people,
right,
to sort of navigate the intricacies of trauma that they face. So,
yeah. And the other example that was listed on Wikipedia was Friends, but it wasn't actually anything, like there was no intersex character. Cause at first I was like, wait, I don't remember there being an intersex person on Friends, but it was about an episode where Brad Pitt was the guest star, and they talked about how him and Ross started a rumor in high school that Rachel was a hermaphrodite. And it was like this whole thing, and she got so mad about it. And like that, there was a lot of backlash from the intersex community being like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why?
Well, and that's the thing, is it comes, I've seen it, I was watching something just the other day, and it's like it a lot of times it is super small and in passing, just like that. It's like, oh, you know, it's that. I mean, it's not a storyline that anyone remembers, but you're watching it, and if you know, you like, people laugh at it and then the joke's gone. But if you know, if you're intersex and you're seeing that, it's like,
right,
another check to like keep it private, you know?
Yeah, it's like, why is her biology a punchline? It's,
yeah, and we're consistently told that like we were made incorrectly.
Yeah.
You know, the narrative is that you're made incorrectly, so don't talk about it, and you know, do these things and you'll be fine. You'll fit into the box. You'll check the box, you know?
So I know a lot of the advocacy right now in the intersex community, or from what I've read, is around trying to get parents and doctors to understand more about like the possible like dangers of performing surgeries on intersex like babies and children. And like, how much progress has been made in that area in terms of educating? And it's kind of like, where do you start? Because I know, like you kind of mentioned it, doctors are, it's not like they're evil or anything. Like they're doing what they think as far right. as like their education is best. But now you have a community of people saying like, hey, maybe it's not.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I had a chat with some med students and they asked the same question. And, you know, it's like, oh, it starts with educating and like educating parents and whatnot. But it really, it's all about the doctors. At first, at least they're the first line of defense. You know, they need to be offering the right options. And what I've really found, and I think everybody can agree, it's like, it's hard to find a good doctor in general, you know?
Yeah.
And so finding a doctor where, you know, every time you go, you have to explain your identity, and like explaining what being intersex is kind of like, it's not super simple all the time, especially if you're going to a doctor and they're like, well, when was the last time you menstruated? And you're like, I don't menstruate. And then it's like, it's because I'm intersex. And then they're like, well, what's intersex? It's just like, then you're like, okay. So it's a lot of emotional labor.
Right. Yeah. They should pay you,
you know? Yeah. Should definitely be a free visit.
Yeah, right.
But you know, and like when I got my breast reduction, one of the tests, even though I told the doctor I was intersex, I had to get a pregnancy test.
Yep.
Are you serious?
You can't be pregnant when you can't be pregnant when you're going under anesthesia. And I got I was like, I'm going to just get the pregnancy test just so I don't have to deal with it. And you know, and like that's fine, but it's just like, it's bullshit.
It's annoying because they also like bill your insurance like 80 bucks for it. I mean, my whole life I've been having to take pregnancy tests and like fighting them, and like they really bully you about it. I'm like, I have never had sex with a man, like unless I have the second coming of Christ in me. It's like, I'm definitely not pregnant. So please just like pass the sex ray over me.
So it's like that with a little extra spice on top.
Right.
I don't even have the parts. Like, granted, I live in a little bit of a bubble, so I'm looking at it and I'm like, so many people talk about being intersex now. It's really just all my friends talk about being, you know, what intersex is.
Right.
And what, you know, talk about intersex issues. I follow a lot of intersex activists and whatnot. I mean, it's doctors, and then, you know, activists have really been on the front lines throughout like history, you know, educating people. In the 90s, Hermaphrodites with Attitude was a newsletter that went out, you know, now we've got Interact, which I mentioned earlier. We have the Intersex Justice Project, which is led by two intersex individuals of color. And it's a super great organization. And they recently had a major win in Chicago. At Lurie Children's Hospital, they vowed to stop doing unnecessary medical intervention on intersex babies. And I believe it also happened in Boston as well. Basically, you know, activists on the ground have been able to kind of like push the needle forward in that. And, you know, it's like getting doctors to really pay attention, because it seems like a no-brainer, but it's like it's interesting how much you really have to talk about it and really break it down to get people to kind of understand where you're coming from, and like how much there isn't a need for like oftentimes how there's not necessarily a need for surgery on an infant. And, you know, one thing a lot of intersex activists want to point out is that we're not necessarily, we're saying we're anti-surgery. We're just saying it's not right to operate on children who have no say right. in the matter. You know, it's giving children bodily autonomy.
Yeah.
To make those decisions when they're older. And, you know, there are, there's lots of complications with that. I was asked one time after I spoke on a panel, like, this adorable old lady actually came up to me and she's like, wouldn't you be nervous to not look normal in like when you were a kid in school? And I was like, you know, that's honestly a tough question to answer for you because probably, but it's just like, I guess, you know, to what I told her is like, I'm advocating for a world where like a child can be exactly who they are and that's okay. And they know about it, you know,
right.
And they have the agency and language to like be who they are.
Yeah.
Discuss it.
Like I can imagine for parents, especially like pre-internet or before this information was out there, that they just had to trust what the doctors said about it because there just wasn't anything out there. And then you just trust like, oh, well, if a doctor is saying that this is the best thing to do and it makes sense what they're saying, sure, let's do it.
Yep, that's exactly what's happening. And the books that they were recommending like were Dr. John Money, who's, you know, going to tell you to put your kid in a dress. So it's like the resources and the language has, you know, become a little bit more mainstream. I would not say it's quite mainstream, but it's, you know, we're getting there, you know.
What is the relationship between sex and gender for you? Because I remember reading like a few years ago that someone got an intersex label on their New York ID. Like someone was the first one. I think it was like 2015 or 2016. And instead of male or female, had intersex on the gender field of their driver's license. But I haven't heard much about that since then, I don't think.
Yeah. So basically, you have to look at gender and sex and kind of like outline what that is. You know, gender refers to a person's like gender identity. Mm-hmm. And the expression and sense of self. And sex refers to a person's like chromosomes and anatomy. And like, there's like seven different ways you can identify a biological sex, you know?
Yeah.
And then your gender identity is sort of how you feel.
But it seems like on forms, I feel like on documents, I'm seeing more and more the two being conflated, though. Like a lot of times now I'll see stuff that says like male, female, or non-binary. I'm like, well, hold on. I thought non-binary was more gender, and then male and female is like are words we use to describe sex. Like, right?
Yeah. I mean, male and female is... I guess when you look at male and female, that's like, I think on those, they're asking for your gender and they're not asking for your biological sex, I guess. I guess they probably on forms, they need to fix that. It's like, what's your gender identity rather than like, what's your sex?
Yeah. Right, right.
Agreed.
Because if I was to answer, I always get really dramatic. Like things, and I like scribble it out and I write intersex. That's actually like a new thing I do.
Yes.
Because I used to like sit there and contemplate and I'd always just check female for the ease of it. I think not that there's three gender as a concept to me is trash, but, you know, if we're going by societal, like if standards and if we are boxing it, you know, I think male, female, and intersex is like are good biological sexes because being intersex traditionally was viewed as like a disorder. It's classified as a disorder, or you know, people pathologize intersex individuals. So it's often like, you know, you need to be fixed or there's something wrong with you. We need to fit you into these boxes. But being intersex is a very healthy, normal, naturally occurring, you know, form of a human. And so that, you know.
And for a lot of people.
Sex, yeah, for a lot of people. And so my biological sex is intersex, you know, like and then my parent, you know, if I have a conversation with my parents, I'll say like, oh no, I'm intersex. And that, but they'll be like, but you're like, you identify as female. And it's like,
oh really?
No, I don't. I identify as intersex. And like, people perceive me as a female. And like, I am a, you know, like the world sees me as female. And I'm too tired to fight anyone on that, but like, you know.
Yeah, sometimes you're just too tired.
Yeah. Yeah. I so like my pronouns are she, they, which is also kind of new. And it's like, that's just basically to be like, she is perceived by female, but like I'm perceived as female, but like they, because I'm queer as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think there's like less pressure now for intersex people to conform to more of a gender binary now that being non-binary is something that's like so much more, prevalent, let's say?
Yeah, I think in some ways I'm sure it has to be, but I think also I'm speaking from a place of incredible privilege, you know, living in New York City, having supportive parents, access to adequate healthcare.
Right. When we say it's prevalent, it's like in our queer bubble, because we also live in New York and talk to mostly queer people.
Yeah. So. Totally. But I think it's important to acknowledge all of those things.
Right.
Because like, you know, it's true. You know, I think there's definitely, I mean, the internet, thank God for the internet, because
right.
I feel like any argument I have where I'm like, I've been on like Instagram for way too long, it's like the internet and like that wealth of information gave me the like gift of language and the ability to find a community. And like, you know, it helps, because we were told that, you know, there's no one like us when we're, you know, when I was growing up there, you know, there's nobody else like me. I'm told,
yeah.
But like, if I had the internet, I would have been able to, you know, find out that that's not the case.
Yeah. And I mean, is there any, I don't know, like, stigma if you're intersex and like around whether or not you decide like, well, I'm, you know, my sex is intersex, but my gender is like woman. Or is there like pressure to then be like non-conforming as an intersex person? Mm. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think so. I think personally, I found that I don't want to like live within the constraints of like a system, that system being gender, of a system that like actively tries to erase me. Like, which I guess is like just society in general, yeah. But again, that's a little bit of a deep conversation.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, intersex, there's not like one, much like every individual in the world, there's not one, you know, way to be intersex.
Right.
I know intersex people who identify as trans. I know intersex people who are super femme. I know intersex people who are super butch. Like, I know intersex people who use she, her pronouns. I know intersex people who use he, him pronouns who are non-binary. You know, there's just, and I think being intersex has made me, I think a pretty empathetic person, and just kind of like, you know, when you break down what gender means to you and how it plays into your life, I feel like it kind of breaks down a lot of like what you thought about yourself and about life and your ideals. And I feel like it's sort of, I'm not saying all intersex people are like super great, nice people, but like, I just feel like it makes you a little bit more accepting of like, you know, claiming your identity for yourself.
Yeah.
And like, and supporting that. So I feel like, there's not necessary the short of it is I don't feel like there's much pressure to conform, because you know, we've all gone through so much.
Yeah.
Kind of get to where we are. And I think there's a big understanding that, like in a lot of the queer community, that your identity is kind of fluid. So like one day you might be feeling more femme, and then the next you might not, you know. The next you may feel like, you know, like a melted popsicle or something. I don't know. I don't often feel the pressure, I guess.
Cool.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good to hear. You mentioned earlier, too, that, you know, one of the things that your parents had talked to you about, or your doctor, in terms of like, okay, like we have to have this conversation because you're probably going to start having sex soon. And then you mentioned that you really start talking about it when you began dating. When do those conversations come into play when you're dating? Like, at what point does it feel necessary to bring that up?
Yeah. I mean, when I first like started dating, because I never dated guys when I was waiting for my very mature college guy. I didn't date anybody in high school. And so when I got to college and started dating women, I guess I sort of kept the same mindset that I had my whole life. It was sort of like, it's just a part of who I am. It's not a bad thing. It's not, you know, I don't really need to talk about it. So it just like wasn't talked about. And I didn't have the language to discuss it. So it was just like, you know, it just wasn't talked about. And then as I got older and like, I learned more about it. The medical care that I received when I was a kid was different than the medical care I started receiving as an adult, mm-hmm. which became very confusing. You know, the questions of like, when was the last time you menstruated, and not knowing how to answer that question, you know,
right,
was really difficult. So like, as I was sort of forced to learn about it while keeping it on the back burner in my early 20s, you know, like I had to really start kind of digging in. And when I had my first serious partner, I sort of fumbled through the definition of it with her. And then she did some Googling, and you know, in 2012, Googling intersex and like, or using keywords that I maybe gave and fumbled to her can kind of give you some scary results.
Yeah.
Especially back then when, you know, you're getting things like hermaphrodite, and it's like, you know, it's like, there's not positive, like affirming language about it.
Yeah.
And so she was like, you know, she was nervous about it. And I literally sat with my parents at 22 and outlined on like a piece of paper how I was going to tell her. And she was super supportive. She was so supportive of it, which was really great, because she wasn't supportive on a lot of other things, but she was supportive on that.
There you go.
which is good.
Yeah.
It was kind of like the first time I felt really affirmed. And then, dating after that, it didn't come up. You know, if I wasn't serious, it wouldn't really come up. And then, if it did come up, I was always really, really nervous. And then once I saw a video with Pidge Pagonis in it, who's a really great intersex activist. And I like started to get the language for it. And so I was able to describe it. And then it became a part, you know, kind of part of the spiel. It was like, you know, this is who I am. It was like, it was kind of right at the top.
Oh, okay.
And now I'm like, if I, in dating profiles, it's like intersex dyke, you know, it's like, that is like what I identify as, is an intersex.
That was
dyke.
My next question. what's your bio?
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like, yeah, you know, being like learning and claiming that, it's just, I feel so empowered by it now, you know? So it was kind of a journey. It's an incredibly active journey into like ridding myself of like the shame and whatnot that I was kind of like taught growing up about it. But yeah, it's something I'm very open with now to everyone. Everyone kind of knows about it. And a lot of it has been like starting my own activism a little bit, like, you know, talking to people like you and, you know, just trying to be more vocal about it, because there's not enough people talking about it. So,
yeah. I mean, when I think about it in terms of dating, it's hard for me to imagine, at least in like the queer community, people having a problem with it. But I imagine there are, and that does happen. But it just doesn't seem like, I'm like, how does that really?
Well, I'm sure you're familiar with the term TERF. So
oh yeah.
It translates to being intersex. You know what I mean?
And so TERFs go after intersex people too?
Wait.
Well, you know, it's just, if you're not like a woman, you know what I mean? Like, you know, born a woman with like what, and so that's kind of why intersex people are sort of the trump card for any sort of gender sex argument, because you're just like, hello,
yeah.
There's like a total variation of it. But like, I am, you know, I would never debate a TERF, but I, you know, if I did debate a TERF, I could like, you know, when I was born, my birth certificate says female, but it's like, all of it's so arbitrary,
yeah. Right.
To be honest, but society needs these boxes because we're all controlled by it. I think everybody, I've introduced like 10 different topic episodes we could have today, but another one is like all issues can pretty much be traced back to like the patriarchal, institutions and racism. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
Everything is geared towards like white men and it's nuanced, but like everything is kind of gendered and like unpacking that is, yeah. Like I said, another episode, but
yeah. Is there anything that the like LGBTQIA community could be doing more of to be like better allies to intersex folks?
Yes. I mean, it's learning. It's having conversations because I think a lot of people like know, you know, LGBTQI. Oh, you're extending it to the I, which that's one easy way to do it. Always extend your LGBTQ+. Put the I in there. That's one way I say people can like be a better ally, even if you are queer. Learning what it is, really learning what it is, because I think a lot of times when people hear intersex, I think they might think it's like trans or it's like, I mean, it's trans adjacent, but it's, you know, it's not the same thing. And I think people kind of get confused.
Yeah. Like you can be intersex and you can be trans, but just because you're intersex doesn't mean you're automatically trans.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, asking people their pronouns, don't make interphobic jokes, which would be like talking about someone's micro penis or like, you know, making fun of someone's genitals for being too big, too small, XYZ. It's just like everybody, it's all variations, you know, people with, you know, excess body hair, you know,
yeah,
bearded ladies. It's like,
absolutely. I have a laser and so, very close to me.
when I like used to do a lot with my like I have a mustache and I used to like try really hard to like conceal it, get rid of it, whatever. It's like, no, it's like, this is my body makes this. Mm-hmm. And so this is like, I'm not like, I mean, obviously my body made my boobs, but, and I changed those, but, I think my hormone replacement therapy actually made those. I think talking about intersex, not leaving them out of the conversations, like including intersex people when you talk about LGBTQI+ issues, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
because I feel like so much of the conversation is about how gender is a spectrum and what gets talked about less is how biological sex is actually a spectrum and it's not just like two things.
Yeah. I think everything is a spectrum.
Right.
Everything is a spectrum. Most things in life are definitely on a spectrum.
For sure.
And you know, another thing that is, it's what's difficult is, you know, we've been talking for a little over an hour now. And it's like, this conversation could last another 2-3. And then I feel like good that you guys know some stuff, but it's like, there's so much, the language around it is so medicalized. So it's like, I'm still learning. I mean, you know, how many times I've stopped and restarted like what I've been saying, because it's like, it's learning medical terms and like how a uterus is formed and what hormones they're responding to and how that like affects their, you know, development in utero. And it's like, I don't know how to have those kinds of discussions. So it's like, it's constantly learning to not pathologize, basically, you know, that intersex people are more than just like a medical, like a thing in a textbook, mm-hmm. you know, on one page of a textbook.
Right.
And that like each, you know, that there's just like every type of human on the planet, intersex, there's like all intersex people have such a diverse, you know, life experience. You know, there's no two like intersex people that are the same, just like there's no two cisgender people that are the same. You know,
I really love what you said earlier, that I know you're quoting someone else, but about how just like everybody's mouth is different. Everybody's nose is different. And when you say it like that, it's just like, so it's such an easy get that it just makes everything seem so much more like, well, yeah, duh. Like it's not like this different weird thing. That's like this rare anomaly, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so simple. It's like really not hard. But yeah. Like, because of so many nuanced little things that just like add up, you know,
yeah,
it gets complicated.
I think that media and media representation and having more stories and more fictional, like positive representations of intersex people would go such a long way in helping people like understand and like normalizing. I guess we'll wrap this up now. And really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today, Maria. What would you say to any of our listeners out there who are struggling with their intersex identity?
My advice is to take it slow. I've really like taken a lot of the pressure off of myself and to just kind of like, no, you know, we have a short life, but like kind of a long life. Yeah. And like, I'm the only one living my life and I need to figure out how that works best for me. Which this is advice for anyone, you know,
right.
This is advice for anyone. And I think, you know, figuring out your identity, can feel constricting sometimes because you don't, you know, if you don't hit everything, in a certain box, it's like, am I that, you know, it can leave you with a lot of questions. And I think, find a community that feels right to you. Find resources that make you feel good. And just go with the feelings that make you feel good. You know, it's about what you want. And yeah, it's really is about what you want. It's about finding the confidence in being yourself and the identities that you choose, or that you kind of are thrust into at times. And, making it work. Yeah. I don't know if that's the best advice. It's just kind of taking your time because everything kind of shakes itself out eventually. And, find your community, however big or small that is.
Online.
It doesn't. And like, I think there's also, sometimes there's pressure to find community and it's like, I need to have a community and it needs to be this. Let go of the expectations that you need to fulfill a requirement, or there's no script for your life. You're the one writing the script for your life. And so you have to do what feels right for that.
Love it. And you have a lot of great video content online where you're talking about your own experiences and then also talking with other intersex people about their experiences as well. Is there any particular one that you would want to direct listeners to if they're interested in learning more about you or about being intersex?
Sure. Yeah. I think one of the helpful video that I did was, for them, the, LGBTQI publication, from Condé Nast. We did a video there. I also work there. I still work at Condé Nast. I do videos with them sometimes, but, we did a video that breaks down the definition and the history of the word intersex, and I host it. So I feel like that kind of breaks it down in a concise way, gives a little bit of historical context, and talks about the community today.
Great. We'll link to that in the show notes for anybody listening.
Perfect. And I think following intersex activists is the best way to stay involved. Interact is a really great organization. The Intersex Justice Project. Sophie and Pigeon lead that and they're great. Forintersex.org is another great resource that is curated by Interact, I believe. And there's a TED Talk video that's not mine, but it's another great resource. That's where I got the quote about the different noses and the different eyes and lips. And that is by my good friend Emily. And so I'll send that link to you as well. But that's another really great resource.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Well, thank you so much for digging out with us today, Maria. This is great.
Yeah. Anytime. This was super fun. I really appreciate the conversation and
likewise.
I appreciate you guys doing this episode and putting it out there.
Yeah. Where can people find you online?
I'm at Maria Treatis. It's kind of I'm sure it's spelled out in the title of this episode.
Will be. Yes.
But yeah. At Maria Treatis on Instagram and Twitter. I don't tweet much, but I don't Instagram much, but I am there.
Yeah. Same.
we'll give you a follow anyway. Thank you again so much, and we hope we cross paths with you in the future. All right, that was such a great conversation. And again, we have in our show notes a link to Maria's piece on them, all about intersex and the history and the evolution of how it's been treated both in the medical community and in the world at large. It's so interesting and so, so important that we're all educated about this.
Absolutely. I already did immediately after the interview, and I very much encourage everyone else to.
And also want to see that movie about her and her sorority's president. Yeah.
I can't stop thinking about it.
We'll call it the happiest pledge season.
Hey. Moving on.
All right, time for our listener question. What do you say?
Here we go. I came out later in life at 32 after marrying my high school boyfriend and having two kids. I'm out now and living my best life. I've never had a one-night stand. All my relationships have been months or years long. I'm a typical U-hauler and have been with my current girlfriend for almost 2 years. After some COVID-related, quote-unquote, restructuring to our relationship, call back to our Sam Ruddy episode, I believe.
Yep. Yep.
I'm exploring the idea of having some casual hookups. My question to you is, are one-night stands worth it, especially with all the complications with COVID? And if so, what are some tips to help a hopeless U-hauler not haul the U? Catch my drift? I do.
Drift caught.
Yeah, that is so tricky. If it weren't COVID, I would be so encouraging the one night stands right now.
Yeah, but because of COVID,
not right
I'm
now.
Saying no.
Yeah, to this question. Yeah, it's you have to not. You have to have a FaceTime date. You have to have a socially distanced date. You have to make sure you're both, you know, tested, COVID free. You have to quarantine for a one night stand, I guess. So you have to, is it a one night stand? Yeah.
What is this restructuring deal? And does it apply only during the pandemic? Because it's a little insane if it's like, okay, just for the rest of the pandemic, yeah. We're in an open relationship. And
yeah, like, if it were like, if that were an option, that's the one Allie would choose. Otherwise, severely monogamous.
Like the only thing I would say is like if you live alone, if maybe the restructuring is around the fact that it's COVID and you're in different places and can't really see each other, and you're not like if you get infected with COVID, you're only really infecting yourself and you're good about quarantining other than like that hookup. Like there is a safe way, I guess, to be casual, but if you have like roommates or you live with a partner or somebody else that you could infect, mm-hmm. then like I would strongly encourage you not to, as somebody who 8 months later I still have symptoms of COVID. You never know. It affects everybody differently.
Right. Unless you can kind of restructure your approach to quarantining and call it 14-day long foreplay. I don't know about one night stands.
Right. Wear a mask and I don't know.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, oh, didn't we already say that scissoring is the safest way to have sex because your face is
yeah,
like 6 feet
I was trying
apart.
To remember if we said that
yeah.
here or in private.
I say it all the time.
I know. She will not stop talking about scissoring.
Just walking down the streets of New York, letting everybody know you got a scissor.
Come on, Carolyn. Jesus. We learned on the We're Having Gay Sex pod that it's cooler to say tripping.
Never. I've never cared about being cool. I'm not going to start now. So your other question, though, that I think we can, that's a little bit less complicated, or maybe not. Are one-night stands worth it? I'm going to say, for me, I've had one thing that I would truly call a one-night stand, and it was okay, you know, it was fun, but as somebody who's
You've
like a serial,
one?
Yeah,
Oh, man.
I know. This is a good team for answering it. It's different perspectives.
Yeah.
I'm a serial monogamist, too. And for me, like, I've never loved super casual sex. Like, I don't necessarily enjoy it. Is there some type of a thrill to, like, meeting someone and going home with them?
Yes.
Yes. But for me, it's like I'd much rather meet somebody, have there be like some tension, have that wondering, like, does she like me? Does she not like me? You know,
that's mature like, of you.
That gradual flirting and then like making a move, like that's what I like. And then there's like a payoff, you know, but like a out at the bar, meet someone, let's go home, and then I never see them again. Like, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but just I know for me, it's not.
Is it a one night stand if you meet that person, go home with them, and then they become kind of a friends with benefits situation?
No.
Is that still a one night stand?
I don't think so.
Oh. Just
my
curious.
One night stand is like I didn't even get the person's last name number.
That was I mean
first
I love
name.
I in a past life was actually only capable of one night stands.
And I know.
I would somehow still be frustrated that no one wanted to date me. Or just like with sleeping with someone immediately, I mean. But still plenty my fair share of strangers that I couldn't name or contact if you asked me to.
But the question of like, are they worth it?
Yeah.
Like, if you're into it, like there's not much of a drawback as long as you're being safe about it. I don't see a huge problem of being like, oh man, that wasn't worth it. Unless you think it's going to do damage to your relationship. But if the agreement is that you can have a one night stand and it sounds like, you know, you went from your high school sweetheart to this U-hauled relationship.
Yeah.
Then it might be good to have those experiences just to check in and see how you actually feel about them. And then you can decide for yourself.
Also, it doesn't have to be one of two extremes when you're restructuring your relationship and opening it up to something more casual. It doesn't need to be a one night stand. Like you can still have like a casual fling with someone that's not a U-Haul relationship. But you're a lesbian, so you can't.
Yeah. That's where it gets harder because like the one night stand that I had was truly like that's for me the only way to not catch feelings. I was like, oh, I can't have any way to track this person down. Like I need to not have her number or last name, not be able. And I tried to find her on social media because that's just me and wanted to stalk this person and have a better idea of who was this woman I just slept with.
I don't want to reinforce stereotypes, but I guess that's, a big concern in this community.
Yeah. But like, other than that, like anybody that I've hooked up with for the most part, like I do kind of catch feelings. And I think that even when I was like first starting to hook up with Cecilia, honestly, I didn't want to date anybody at the time. I had it in my mind that like this isn't going to be serious at all. I told myself like over and over, like you can't be in a relationship right now. And part of why I started dating her was I thought like, oh, there's no way that this would work out because we're both getting a divorce and neither of us are in a place to be in a relationship.
Oh,
and look
my
at
God.
Us now.
Fuck, you're right. You and Cecilia got together around the time that Allie and I got together. And I just realized Allie and I were a one night stand. Like we were like comedy acquaintances in the scene, but like, we had sex and then did not speak to each other at all for a full month until we were both at a comedy show and ran into each other. And then we went home together and have been together since.
Yeah.
And she was about to move to New York and we're like, this isn't going to work. And I had just gotten out of a long relationship, my only relationship, and was like, never again. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Damn it.
And it's not like this for everybody, but this listener in particular is saying that there's somebody who tends to catch feelings. And so if you're like anything like me, I would say like a true one night stand, you know, do it safely, but don't do anything that would keep you connected. Just you got to cut it loose.
You can restructure right relationships, after. But not your feelings.
Yes, feelings are a lot harder to restructure. Mm. You know, you're going to feel what you're going to feel. And
yeah, don't budge.
Yeah. Well, good luck. Please be safe.
Yeah.
The numbers are too
please
high.
Please be safe and scissor. Please.
Right. If you want more of this great content, you know, make sure that you are subscribed to us, and you can follow us on social media at Dyking Out on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. We're putting out different content on all three, though Facebook, it's mostly the Patreon group at this point.
Yeah, but and then there's the Patreon itself with a lot more content. I will be posting pictures of my hot mom on there.
Yes. Yes,
get
please.
In on it.
And you can follow us on TikTok at Dyking Out Pod, where I've been bullying Melody into making another TikTok to redeem herself.
Yeah, especially if after we got some comments about how I'm not a good dancer. Okay?
Not that you're not a good dancer. It's that I'm the better one.
Yeah. And that I can't
prove them wrong.
I will.
Prove them wrong, Melody. And then you can follow me personally at TGI Carolyn on Twitter, on Instagram.
And you can follow me at Melody Kamali on, I guess, Twitter, definitely Instagram, perhaps TikTok. 4 whole videos now on there.
Thank you so much for diking out with us this week. And
see you next Tuesday.
See you next Tuesday.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question 2 ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.